This episode kicks off a very special month with Debt Free Mom. On the podcast, in the community, and on Instagram, we are taking the entire month of March to talk about feeding the family. In today's episode, I want to set the stage for the month. What are the ground rules? What are the things we will be focusing on when it comes to feeding the family, and what will we not? And also why it matters. Why does it matter to talk about eating most of our meals at home? So welcome to the first episode of our mini-series, Feed the Family. All right, I want to kick off this episode with a story. So a little over a year ago, I was looking at an Instagram post from a business coach that I follow, admire, have read books from, really enjoy his content, and has helped me grow into confidence as a business owner. The specific post I was reading, he is talking about entrepreneurs and people trying to get started on businesses and telling them that eating at home is a waste of time. He said the amount of time it takes to meal plan, grocery shop, cook, clean it up is time that a business owner could be generating ideas, generating content, generating revenue. And his recommendation is to literally eat all of your meals out, to have someone else cook and prepare and clean up all of your meals. Now, as you can imagine, and what you might be thinking right away, this content sparked a lot of controversy. There were a lot of comments on this right away. A lot of them were agreeing with him. I'll say most of them were single, many of them men, who were agreeing that yes, the best way to approach food while you're trying to grow a business is to not be involved in managing it at all. Now, there were people like me who are growing businesses, but are also growing families, who are parents, who are married, who have households, who have very limited budgets while trying to build a business and simply could not sustain eating all of our meals out. When I tend to come across something that I disagree with on Instagram, my default is to ignore it and swipe on by. I have no desire to add to the sound, the noise of disagreement online. But I thought I had a unique position as someone who appreciates, still appreciates, and values his voice in the space of business coaching. And then I also have personal experience feeding a family, and my business focuses on wise financial management. So I commented and said, I love what he does. I learn from him all the time. And I want to add a perspective that there is more to this idea of should we eat out or should we eat at home than what can it save and what can I spend? So for example, a lot of people just simply could not afford to eat all of their meals out compared to eating meals at home. Second of all, while it sounds great that if we eat all of our meals out, we have all this extra time to grow the business, you actually have to be disciplined enough to be generating revenue during the time that you would have been meal planning, cooking, cleaning up, and being at home. If I know myself well, I know if I completely outsourced all of our meals and ate out all the time, I would not use all of that time to grow my business. I would probably use it for leisure or getting something else done. So it wouldn't necessarily offset the massively increased expense of eating all of our meals out. And second, and this was the really important part, I said there is so much more to the habit of sitting around a table with people you love and enjoying a meal inside someone's home, inside the comfort, safety of someone's home that just can't be replicated at a restaurant. And especially when we're trying to turn eating into something that we're only looking at for efficiency and fuel, we miss out on this beautiful picture of meal times. And you don't have to be married to enjoy that. You don't have to have kids. But sitting in someone's home, welcoming other people into your home and accepting the invitation to go to other people's homes, and even eating meals by yourself in your own home, there is something very core to our human experience that is centered around sitting at someone's table and eating food. And so I mentioned this. I mentioned that I want for my kids to grow up with these big memories of eating meals at home, and that it didn't matter what the food was. It mattered that the habit was there, that they have this long list of memories of sitting around the table, whoever was available, eating, looking each other in the eye, all devices were away, all distractions were away, and we ate food. So I commented that, and a lot of people responded. A lot of mothers spoke up in agreement saying, yes, I could not afford to go even 1 week of eating all of our meals out compared to eating all of them at home. And then there was a really special comment to me that stuck with me that I still remember, that I sometimes go back and just look at and read it. I think the reason his comment stuck with me so much is because I have 3 sons, and his comment made me think about what they would be like when they're older and how they would look back on eating at home. So this man responded to my comment, and he said, While I agree with the original poster that I think I could grow my business better by completely outsourcing the task of food and eating all of my meals at home, I'm glad that my mom doesn't. And that just, like, when I read that, I was like, that's all I need to hear to keep going, to remind myself of why I'm doing this. So here's this single adult man who is trying to build a business and got excited about someone that he respects and looks up to, giving him basically the green light to eat all of his meals out and not try to cook at home. And he responded to my comment as a mom of four kids who's also trying to grow a business and said that while he's probably going to eat a lot of his meals out based on this original advice, he's glad that his mom didn't. He is implying that he has these childhood memories that his mom offered him by eating food at home, and he's thankful for those memories. So as we go into this month, that is what I want to have in mind, that our primary focus is not actually on reducing your costs. Yes, food budgets are stressful. Rising prices are stressful. Growing appetites from kids is stressful. But what I actually want to cast a vision for is how can we enjoy simple meals at home? Not suffer through, not grit our teeth and bear it, not try to pretend like Chick-fil-A doesn't exist. How can we actually cast a vision for our home that says the habit of eating a meal around the table is enjoyable, it's desirable, it's something that we actually want to cultivate? So that's the picture I'm going to have in my mind of my adult children looking back, and whether they decide to eat meals around the table in adulthood or not, that they would have this memory that they're glad that I made a habit of eating meals around the table at home. Now, the other thing that's going to come up a lot in this month is mom math. Now, for those of you new to mom math who might not follow me on Instagram, this is a phrase I use to talk about the numbers of everyday life. It does not mean that I think a mom can do this math. It's that I'm a mom. I'm living a very ordinary everyday life, and I love math. And so I like to play around with the numbers, the hidden numbers of these everyday life choices. So to kick off the month and talk about this mom math, the first thing I want to bring up is the cost difference, consistent cost difference between getting food out at a restaurant, whether it's a sit-down restaurant or a drive-thru, versus getting food at the grocery store and making it at home. So you can Google this for yourself, and I don't even have one specific source because when I researched it, it was source after source after source that had the consistent same answer. I wanted to know, what is the markup? What are we consistently multiplying our original cost by in order to buy food out? And how does that compare to grocery prices? And across the board in the United States, restaurants say that for the amount of food that you are receiving versus the cost that you're paying for it, that is consistently three times higher than what it would cost you to eat that same food from a grocery store. Now, when I say that, a lot of people disagree right away, and here's why. I think they're factoring in buying the quantity of that food that the grocery store requires you to buy. So, for example, if you think about your favorite combo meal of a burger, fries, and a soda at a fast food place, and you're thinking, well, that's only $11. I couldn't buy a pack of buns and a pack of cheese and ground beef and a bag of fries and a soda at the grocery store for $11. So this fast food is cheap. But when we're talking about comparing these prices, we don't think about going into the grocery store and buying all of those quantities. We need to compare apples to apples. And the way that we do that is looking at the unit price. So we divide, for example, a pack of buns. If a pack of buns is $2 and there's 8 buns in the pack, each bun is 50 cents. So that's the number that we need to add up when figuring out how much it costs to get that same food at the grocery store. So we don't want to look at buying the full bag of something when comparing the cost. We actually want to look at what does it cost for one bun, one slice of cheese, 4 ounces of ground beef, 5 ounces of frozen French fries, and a 12-ounce soda, and add that up and see how it compares to $11 from the fast food store. I have done this time after time. I will do it again on Instagram as we share throughout this month, but I've run the numbers and this is consistently true. If we break down the prices from our grocery store compared to the prices at our restaurants, there is typically a factor of at least 3 that I would take the grocery store numbers and have to multiply it by at least 3 to get to how much that food would cost if I got it while eating out. I don't do this with every single meal. In fact, I rarely do it anymore. And I don't want other people to be doing this all the time. What we can do by calculating this just a couple of times, it can help us shift our perspective and keep it in mind. So I don't need to run the numbers on every meal out versus every meal at the grocery store. Now that I've done it a few times, I simply know that there is a pattern of the food I eat at home costing three times less than the food I would eat out. So when I'm trying to decide, oh, do I really want to make food at home or do I want to go out? Sometimes I go out and sometimes I eat at home, but knowing this three times factor helps to make that decision. So I just want to arm you, equip you with information so that you also can have those numbers in your head as you're making those decisions too. So I'll repeat that again. My goal is not that everyone is out there constantly calculating how much each of their expenses or each of their groceries are costing them when they break it down into unit price. My goal is to do that exercise one, two, maybe three times over the next month so that you can see that this factor, this pattern holds true and then apply it moving forward. Now, this very quickly leads me into ground rule number one. My goal and intention of this month is not to vilify eating out. Eating out is not a bad thing. It's actually a very good thing. It's such a good thing that I budget for our family to eat out once a week. I also budget for date night that we use for eating out. I also budget for us to go out to eat on birthdays and on anniversaries. And I have a whole separate line for getting coffee out because that is such an important thing to us that it deserves its own line in the budget. I am not here to vilify eating out or make anyone feel bad for eating out. What I want to do is offer an alternative that becomes more enticing than eating out. Because what I run into a lot of times when I talk about eating at home is this big objection, this big obstacle that people have trouble overcoming. And it's this: eating out is fun and tasty, and eating home is this bland, boring, necessary task that I have to trudge through and then I have to clean up. And I have to do all these things I hate. So if I'm going to switch from eating more meals out to eating more meals at home, it's going to be a painful experience. And that is what I want to break down. That's what I want to break apart, is to say, hey, it can actually become this very simple, quick, easy thing that fits into your schedule, fits better into your budget, and tastes good. So in order to do that, we need to mix some practical tips and tricks with some emotional work, figuring out what are we drawn to? Why am I so quick to go get takeout when eating at home would not take that much time? So we'll need to combine those two things in order to see a few shifts in our default spending habits. And here's something I have experienced firsthand. Something that we do occasionally is actually a lot more enjoyable than something we do constantly. Something that I occasionally get to do increases my joy compared to taking that same thing and trying to do it all the time. Here's what I mean. I think we all have these things that we can look back on and say, oh, before I got to do this thing, it was all I could think about. It was so exciting. Think about driving. Think about before you had your permit. And the idea of driving a car was like all you could think about. It was like, I cannot wait until I have my permit and then I have my license. And I am going to drive myself from home to school and back again. And it was like this thrilling idea. We were so obsessed with this idea of being the driver, being behind a driver's seat. Let me tell you with absolute certainty that I have not felt that way since I was 16. I do not get into the van in the morning to drive my children to school instead of myself to school and think, oh my gosh, I am behind the wheel of a vehicle. I am alone in a vehicle and I am in charge of the gas and the brake and the steering. I don't think that at all because now it's something that I do constantly. If I really thought about it or if it went away for a while and then I got back in the car, then I would be excited about it. Here's an example. When I had both of my C-sections, I did not drive myself for quite some time. If I wanted to go anywhere, I was driven by someone else. So several weeks of not driving myself anywhere, not being alone in the car at any time, when I got back into the car to be able to drive for the first time after that break, it was special. I loved it. I was like, oh my gosh, I am driving myself to Target. I am going alone. Why was it special? Not because it was any different than how it was before I had the C-section and needed to take a break. But because I had a break, because I had time between the last time that I had driven and the next time I had driven, it felt special again. So we want to apply that idea to eating out too. If we so normalize it where every other night we're getting food out, it takes away the joy of it. It takes away the experience. It takes away trying something new and having something to look forward to. Have you ever read those studies about travel where it says like 90% of the joy of travel is actually just the anticipation while you're at home leading up to when you actually go? That's most of the joy of that trip comes from the time between when you book it and when you leave to go on the trip, not when you come home. The time that you're actually on the trip tends to be less enjoyable than the anticipation of going on the trip. So if we set a very simple standard for ourselves, like we eat out every Friday, then we know on the other days that we're not going to eat out and we have something to look forward to. We're building anticipation. We're building joy. We can actually have conversations with our kids like, oh, you know, it's Tuesday. 3 days from now, we're going to go out. What sounds good? What would be something that we would like to try? And allow that anticipation to build. And then when we go out on Friday, we savor it even more because it was something that we are occasionally doing instead of constantly doing. So I'm actually encouraging you to eat out a little bit less, to increase your joy a little bit more. So that's ground rule number one, is that we are not vilifying eating out. We're trying to figure out ways to enjoy eating out more and enjoy eating at home more. I spent years feeling frustrated that my money wasn't working the way it should. It wasn't until I discovered the magic of budgeting by pay period rather than by month that my money started to feel stable. Pay Period Budget Academy is my signature budgeting course that helps hundreds of women take control of their home finances. Join today at debtfreemom.co/PBA and use the code podcast at checkout to get 20% off your membership. Ground rule number two, I am not a dietitian. I will not be telling you what to eat. I will not be talking about counting calories. I will not be calling any food healthy versus unhealthy. It is a personal pet peeve of mine when people who have no training whatsoever are constantly applying the word healthy to things that they eat and the word unhealthy to things that other people eat. Gets under my skin, if I'm very honest. So they'll share things like, this is my healthy version of this food that all you other people are eating. As if there is some objectively standardized way to say, if you use this ingredient, that food is objectively healthy. And if you don't use it, then it's objectively bad. I will not be doing that. I will not be qualifying anything as healthy. I'll be discussing principles I've learned from people who are qualified, like registered dietitians, and how what I've learned from them has helped my family. So I'm only going to be speaking about it in terms of my personal experience and how we've applied that, and it may or may not help you. So this will be principles like starting my kids with very small quantities of food on their plate and allowing them to ask for seconds, as opposed to piling their plate up with the quantity that I think they will eat, and then having to watch as I feel like our food is being wasted. That's something I've learned from a dietitian. Another one is pairing a snack that they love with a protein or a fat if the snack that they choose tends to be carb heavy. So I don't take away the carb heavy snack. I just add something. I offer something that will allow them to feel more full and go between snacks and mealtimes with a full belly, with energy. That's another thing I've learned from a dietitian. And that's about the extent of things like that that I'll be bringing up. I'll be talking about the building blocks of meals and how if I don't have a recipe, how I will look at my cabinet and I'll say, what could I make that's a protein, that's a fat, and that's a carb? Because those are the three macronutrients that all of our meals should have. And then what produce can I add with it? So that's the approach I take when, you know, if I'm doing pasta and meat and cheese, that's protein, fat, and carb. And then I'll add grapes and carrots on the side. So we'll talk a lot more about that in other episodes and in other content, but that is my general framework for meals when I don't want to follow a recipe is I say, do I have a protein, fat, and carb, and what produce can I add on the side? Repeat, repeat, repeat. Ground rule number three is that we are going to actively combat the feeling of restriction. I want to make mealtime and cooking and meal planning and grocery shopping fit into your life in a way that it doesn't feel like the consolation prize. It doesn't feel like something you have to do because you don't make as much money as someone else, and that if you made more, you could eat out all the time. I want it to be something that is so simple and so enjoyable, you would prefer doing it no matter what your salary is. So this will look like fun investigative content. Like, I wonder how much time it takes me to leave my house, drive to Chick-fil-A, stay in line, order the food, drive home, and then eat. And then figuring out how long it takes me to be at home, decide to make something, pull something together, and get it on the table. Because this could help us redefine the phrase fast food. I think a lot of times when we think about fast food, we do think that it is actually faster than eating at home. I will say, spoiler alert, this is a myth. What we're actually looking for is to not be the one cooking, to not be the one cleaning up. So we'll talk about ways to eat at home without cooking at home. This will also look like sharing ways to make food more flavorful. If your food at home is bland, you're not going to be interested in eating it. So what are simple ways we can do to spice it up, literally, so that we're like, wow, this tastes really good. I actually would prefer to eat this than to swing through another drive-through. That can help us combat that feeling of restrictive when we realize the food at home can be more flavorful than the food that I'm getting out. I want you to look forward to eating at home and then occasionally look forward to eating out. Not see eating at home as something that you have to suffer through in order to be able to later eat out. And ground rule number 4 is that I will be sharing tools that have helped me be efficient in the kitchen as someone who has been cooking most of our meals at home for over 10 years. You don't have to buy any of them. I am by nature a very late adopter. So something like an Instant Pot or an air fryer, if I buy it at all, I'm buying it 3 to 5 years after it became a trend. So I'll be giving my honest review on how these tools do or do not help me in the kitchen as I'm feeding my family of 6. Care Creates Contentment is something I talk about all the time, regardless of the topic, whether it's food or homes or budgets or hair or clothing. And this is something that I want to apply to the kitchen as well. So with Care Creates Contentment, we do focus on using what we have, enjoying what we have. But another principle of Care Creates Contentment is, can I spend a little to help stop me from spending a lot? So in the context of feeding the family, this might look like buying 1 or 2 low-priced kitchen gadgets or tools or replacing something that is old in order to get food on the table in a more efficient way. And when we feel like we can get food on the table in an efficient way that tastes good, that our family wants to eat, we help to decrease some of that allure of getting food out constantly. So I will be sharing some of those tools, gadgets, tricks, things that I have added to my kitchen over time, but you don't have to buy any of them in order to find success in feeding your family. So I'll give you one example in my personal life of something that I have done to spend a little in order to avoid spending a lot. Back in September, I went and stayed with one of my sisters right after she had had her very first baby. I stayed for just a couple nights, and while I was there, she had a Nespresso Virtuo machine, and we made iced lattes, hot lattes and iced lattes. As a coffee snob myself, married to someone who's even more of a coffee snob than me, I was very skeptical that this would taste anything like espresso beverages I get out. I was very surprised that I enjoyed these espresso beverages. Now, I will say, I do not at all like the coffee that comes out of this because I like to drink my coffee black, and the coffee beverages are bitter and the grounds are clearly burnt, and I don't like the taste of it at all. But the espresso beverages, I really do like. So that was in September, and I was really like, wow, that could maybe be an option, because my husband is enough of a coffee snob that if we were ever to get an espresso machine at home, he would absolutely not be happy with the $100, $200 version. He's basically like, you either need to spend $1,000 or not own an espresso machine. So I've been not having an espresso machine. But then I was like, well, if it's not an espresso machine, if I'm not going to claim that it is an actual legit espresso machine, and it's just a quick way to have some of my cold beverages from home, then he would be fine with it. So I started looking at Facebook Marketplace in December and looking at how much would it cost to get a used one. This is the kind of thing that people buy brand new all the time. They lose their interest in it within a couple of weeks, and then they put it on sale for less than half of what they paid for it. So I waited and waited and waited, and I decided to actually get it in January. So I finally found one that was the one I wanted, the brand that I wanted. It's a Breville brand, and we use Breville for lots of different things. So I knew that that would be something I would like. And I found it for $50. So I went and picked it up, and I didn't even know that she was actually going to give me a bunch of pods to go along with it. The pods are about $1 each. You can order them online, find them in stores as well. And she gave me a bunch as well, which would have been worth like $30 just for the pods alone. So I went on Amazon after I got it and looked at what would this have been new. It would have been about $120 for the machine and about $30 for the amount of pods she gave me. So that would be $150 on Amazon before taxes, and I paid $50 cash. So this was a huge win for me. Now, this was an additional expense, right, on top of my other coffee budgets. But what has happened since then, in the weeks since I purchased that and have found ways to enjoy hot and iced lattes in the afternoon from home, decaf ones, caffeinated ones, mochas, vanilla, I have reduced my coffee budget from about $80 per pay period. We have two pay periods per month. I've reduced it from about $80 per pay period to about $45 per pay period on average. So this is about $70 per month less in coffee spending. So a one-time purchase of $50 and then occasionally ordering the pods has reduced my coffee budget by $70. And I'm spending way less than $70 a month on pods. I'm spending about $25 per month. So I have then grown the gap between my income and expenses by being willing to spend a little to help me stop spending a lot. So there's all kinds of examples we could use in the area of kitchens, feeding the family, eating and drinking at home. And maybe as we move into this month and we kick off Feed the Family Month, maybe you want to look at your budget and say, can I adjust a few things so that I make room for $30 to $40 that I want to spend a little to help me avoid spending a lot? So take a hard look at how much you have been spending at restaurants and at coffee shops and maybe even at groceries, and think strategically as we share things this month. Think, could one or two of these small tools actually help me decrease what I have been spending? For example, if you're spending $400 a month at restaurants and buying a $80 air fryer would help you reduce your spending by $100 a month, you would recover your cost of the air fryer in 1 month and start saving $100 a month after that. That's a spend a little to avoid spending a lot. No pressure to buy anything that we talk about, but think in advance about ways that your kitchen might be causing you to spend more out because it feels like a place that is not efficient or effective when it comes to feeding your family. So I hope this episode has helped you cast a vision for what you might want to learn during the month. As we're talking about feeding the family, have in your mind that we're trying to find simple ways to enjoy eating most of our meals at home. That is the catchphrase of my Feed the Family course and ebook. That is the overarching theme of what I try to do for my own family. And each word in that phrase matters. So I'll say it again. A simple approach for enjoying most, not all, meals at home. So that's what I want to help you do this month. That's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to have guests come on the show to talk about their different areas of expertise when it comes to food. And then we're also going to be brainstorming ideas for things that we can do in our own homes inside the Care Creates community. So it is only $9 a month to join. It is this creative, encouraging space of members who are budgeters, who are trying to find ways to grow the gap between their income and expenses and create a financial future they're proud of. So we are going to be doing that inside that community, focusing on feeding the family well. So we'll be sharing meal plans, my meal plans, and other people's meal plans. We're going to have a live call together to talk about this and do all kinds of fun things, a giveaway. So if you feel like this is something you really want to dive into, you can join the Care Creates community at carecreatescommunity.com. It is only $9 a month and you can cancel anytime. So I hope you stick around for this month of podcast episodes all about feeding the family, and we will see you around.
Hey, this is Kyle and Carly back for another segment of Not Worth Your Money, where we figure out if something's going to be worth paying for. And for this month, with our food spending focus inside our Care Creates community and across everything, we're going to talk about some food-related stuff. So I have one. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
DoorDash or Uber Eats or any kind of food delivery, is that worth it?
Like, can we use DoorDash to pick up, or are you specifically asking about delivery?
I think all-encompassing.
Encompassing. I find it almost never worth the money. I will get food out, but I will do, and maybe this is just like, this was ingrained in me as a child. Anytime we ordered pizza, we absolutely never did delivery. We always went and picked it up. So I think that is kind of a carryover from my childhood, but I look at the fees and the, not only are the prices themselves of the food higher than if you directly went to that restaurant most of the time, then you add on the service fees, the delivery fees. I want to tip a driver if they're bringing food to my house, and that can increase, I mean, like 10 to 20% over and above what it would have been to just like go and get that food myself or sit down at that restaurant. So I tend to not do it unless I will get, you know, if you don't do something for a while, they send you like a, hey, come back and we'll give you $20 off, whatever. Then I'll do it. And then I won't do it again until they send me another one. So I do occasionally use it when I'm either in a pinch or like really craving something specific or have a coupon. But at, on the whole, I do not default to something like DoorDash.
I would agree. I recently got a gift card for one of them. And so I definitely used it. I'm not like...
It's definitely a treat. I mean, like, yeah, if somebody's like, okay, on me, let's order some DoorDash, I'm all about it.
For sure. But yeah, I agree. There's very few times where it is worth it to me to order and not just run out and actually get the food myself. But maybe a more, I think that's the expected answer from us. Like, don't spend more money than you need to.
Well, here, can I say something else about it?
Yeah.
I also have found that we've tried it enough times that the idea of it compared to the actual experience of it is very different. So the idea of sitting on my couch, pushing a few buttons on my phone, and then this nice meal shows up at my door is great. But what often happens is that you wait a really long time to the point that I easily could have cooked something or ran out and got it myself. And not only do you wait a really long time, but it is often cold. And then also if it's wrong, there's no way to fix it and you're going out and getting something different anyways, or just not getting what you expected. And so I have several times experienced this letdown between what I'm imagining it will be like to order DoorDash delivery and not have to cook or have any involvement in it, compared to the actual experience of how long it takes and what the food is actually like. That has happened enough times to where I second guess when I'm like, oh, we should do DoorDash. Last time it was kind of iffy. Maybe I'll try something else. So it's not just about the money for me either.
Yeah. When is it worth it? I think that's maybe a more interesting question.
When I was 2 days past my due date with Ruby, I DoorDashed a single slice of chocolate cake from Portillo's. And it was worth it.
Definitely. It was worth it for me for you to do that as well.
I was talking about it constantly. So yeah, it is worth it. I think it's a tool to have in our back pocket of like, when stuff is really hitting the fan, or like I said, you have a very strong craving for something specific, it can, you know, it can in a pinch alleviate something where it's like all of this other stuff is stressful and going on in our life. And if I have to add cooking or add running out to go get food, it's going to throw me over the edge. I'm just going to order something. I think having it in my back pocket as a last resort is something that I am glad is an option. I don't jump to that every time I feel slightly stressed.
A couple of times I remember it feeling worth it for us when we've ordered, it's been when we're traveling. We're in a hotel and it's 9 p.m. and we just got in from a long day. Having that delivered when we're traveling, I think are definitely circumstances where I'm fine paying the service fees and everything.
Yeah. Where did we DoorDash from Chicago at 1 a.m?
This was one of my favorite times.
And my least favorite.
We got food from one of Guy Fieri's restaurants, and I was psyched about it. It was like 45 minutes.
It came in the most like cartoony packaging, too. Do you remember like the boxes that had all the bright drawings on them?
Yep.
I stood outside on the Chicago streets at 1 a.m. by myself waiting for the driver to come. It was my birthday trip.
Yes. And I thought it was great. And Carly did not.
I thought, what are we doing?
Yeah, sometimes it's worth it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not. And so I guess at the end of this whole conversation, was it even worth listening to? Who knows? But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back next time with another segment of Not Worth Your Money.
See ya. Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.